kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. It's another reviews episode lined up for you. Party cast time. Cole's not here, though. She'll be here later on in the show with Jacob. But Pernell and Chris, you're both here. How are you guys doing?
Hey, I'm doing good.
I'm doing dead.
You're doing dead.
Oh, my God.
I am tired, so I am pushing through with waves of silliness. So yesterday, I was off from work because of Veterans Day. Didn't realize, so I pulled up in the lot and no one was there. But I made the best use of the day by doing some house cleaning and then proceeding to burn 5,000 calories. I resulted in waking up this morning. Walking was hard and I did normal stuff. And then I told myself, I gotta go to the gym again, because if I don't, I won't go Thursday, because I'm gonna go see a Konosuba movie from the anime or whatever. And then I got to record tomorrow. So it's like, no time. Got to go to the gym tonight. So I'm running on fumes, overstretched, but I like video games and I like you guys. So
that's
also
sweet.
It's sweet. It's a lot of sugar in there. But the point is, we're having a good time. And it's too goddamn cold outside. It's supposed to be fall. We're getting fucking cheated. We got cheated. I'm just going to say it.
Straight to winter now.
It really is. Like yesterday, I was in shorts all day. And I was happy with that. I mean, I shouldn't have been, because that's weird to be in shorts in the fall, but whatever. And then today, it dropped like 30 degrees. Just like that. No warning, no prep, nothing. Buck nothing out in the cold. Wonder how I got there. And I want fall back.
Yeah. Chris, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right. It got cold in Texas, and that's about all there is there. Had an unexpected day off from work today, which is nice.
Nice.
Not a bad one. Like, we're all gonna get fired or something. Just the truck's in the shop, so we can't go anywhere. So we're just staying at home.
Put that day to use. Get some game time in. Watch a good show.
I've been playing more Destiny Connect.
Because
I'm trying to get through that before I get back to my other RPGs. I'm like, I need to not just, you know, get three quarters of the way through a game that I bought for money and then just leave it alone forever.
Now, I gotta say, I am literally surprised that you're still playing the game. Not because it's bad or nothing or anything. That's quite the contrary. Just that it just, like, it seems so short. Like, I mean, unless you're like looking for water orbs, which I admit I was doing that for a bit until I got like the one outfit I wanted. I was like, I don't need any more water
orbs. Yeah, I didn't bother with the water orbs. No, I'm just playing it slowly, and I don't really get to play a whole lot every day. So, between all the stuff I have to like review and everything,
makes sense.
But I feel like I'm getting pretty close to the end.
It's your cold steel.
Yeah,
that's
cat
my
scratching kitty at the door.
Kitty.
Kitties.
Yeah, you're talking about reviews. There's a lot of games that we have to review on this episode. You guys just want to dive into things?
Yes, because the fuel lines are burning.
Only got so much time with Pernell before he dies.
Yes.
He'll be mid-review. So, Pernell, what do you give this game? Well, Pernell?
Now there's our Patreon content.
Oh geez. No, this is episode content. This is episode content. awful episode content. We can't be unsupervised. We need Cole here. We can't get our shit together.
It's true. We're talking about vegan meat alternatives and things like that. We're out of control.
We gotta get down to that holler wake her up.
Carnage Subprenel, what do you think of those limited edition white fudge Oreos?
I have not touched them. I ran the fuck away. So I will say this, though. I they're sitting on the counter because I'm like, don't eat them, don't eat them. But my full ass self did succumb to the latte Oreos.
Latte Oreos.
They have latte Oreos. They're the thin ones, though. They're meant to fool you to think that they're healthier somehow because they're smaller. Fuck no, they're not healthy. They're just a trap.
But you just eat more of them.
Exactly. You just eat the whole damn bag faster. And they're latte. So you wake, you're more awake when you're done. So you go get more. You go buy another bag.
Tom is excited about latte Oreos. He's going to be on the show later, too.
He should be excited for latte Oreos because they are what got me back into the game. I was done.
Back into the game.
Yes, I staved off the cravings. I was good. Golden, baby. Nothing was coming through. And then all of a sudden, hey, man, I heard you like caffeinated beverages with a little bit of chocolate inside. We got these latte Oreos for you. Great. You'll love them. And they're thin. You'll feel like you're eating better than if they were normal Oreos.
Oh, no, Lord. You
won't, but your brain will say otherwise. So just buy the damn bag. And then I did.
All right, we're not getting into another Oreo discussion. We wasted too much time on Oreos, what, 4 episodes ago?
So I got to tell you, my favorite flavor of Oreo.
Son of a bitch. Fuck that. First game to talk about tonight is called New Super Lucky's Tale, developed and published by Playful Corp, released November 8th on the Switch for $39.99. Run, jump, climb incredible heights, burrow deep underground, overcome enemies, and explore amazing worlds on an epic quest to rescue the Book of Ages from the mysterious Jinx and his nefarious kitty litter. Purnell, tell us about New Super Lucky's Tale.
Well, the one thing I like about it that you just flat out brought up is the fact I like that the enemy team is called the Kitty Litter. So there's something a little bit positive and swell about that. So, New Super Lucky's Tale. And for the record, I've never played Super Lucky's Tale, though it is on my shelf. Shock! So, I'm not really going to tell you. You should be surprised. So, I can't alright tell you what the new is in New Super Lucky's Tale. However, what I can tell you is that this game is honestly a very nice quality throwback to retro mascot-driven 90s platformers of the 3D variety. What I mean by that is you are a plucky young character who is adorable, named Lucky. Game is not exactly challenging, but the lack of challenge does not work as a detriment to the game. You'll just enjoy playing it because, it's also a junior bit of a collectathon. You're not collecting, you know, every banana from every Donkey Kong family member or anything crazy like that. But every level you go into has a set of collectibles you have to pick up, be it the letters in Lucky's name, you know, typical letter collection to spell out, or a certain number of coins, or just general extra hidden pages to the book that Joe mentioned earlier on. Now, when you collect the 300 coins, when you collect 300 coins, you collect the letters in the name Lucky, or you collect the page book, you get additional pages to the book as you're running through the different stages. And these pages ultimately unlock new stages and also boss fights in the different worlds in the game, of which there are, let's see here, I didn't write it down, but I'm playing the game. There are 6 levels, or 6 worlds, rather, to play through. So if that's more than there was in Super Lucky's Tale, boom, there's your new. But honestly, the levels themselves are pretty nice. There's a lot of humor in the dialogue, whether you're talking to golems or whatever mascot each world typically runs on, because each world seems to have its own little mascot type species living in it, which I kind of like. It's a little bit of personality that makes each world a little bit more unique. But the dialogue is fun. The controls are very snappy and precise. And the level variety I kind of enjoy too, because like I mentioned, every level does have the collections of the things I mentioned before, but there's variety in the layouts. Some levels are 3D, like full 3D, and you're running around doing stuff. Other levels are 2D side scrollers. And then there are others that are kind of 2.5D and they're auto running. So you're basically like just mainly dealing with jumps and his other maneuvers. What other maneuvers does Lucky have? Well, he doesn't have a large plethora of moves, but they get the job done. He can run, he can jump, he can double jump, he can do like a weird sort of dive attack, he can burrow underground, which allows him to get into like interesting nooks and crannies and also dig up like coins and treasures, and he can ground pound. And that's it. Oh, sorry, he has a tail swipe move too, but it's a hopping bop. I ain't swiping no tail. I'm trying to stomp dudes. Oh, I don't use that unless the game requires it. So honestly, that's pretty much everything Lucky can do. And that's all you need him to do, because the levels themselves add all the variety and legwork to make those moves get put to use, whether it's a mechanical stage or farm stage or a sky stage or underground stage or whatever, haunted stage. There's just stuff that they give you to do within the levels themselves to make you allow you to make use of Lucky's abilities in a way that you'll just constantly find enjoyable and fun. Now, the boss battles themselves, they, like I said earlier, I mean, they don't really buck the trend either of being, you know, any more challenging. They're all fairly easy, but I do like the fact that they don't go the Mario Brothers route where bosses die in three hits. You actually get to see what the boss can do before they lose. It's kind of nice. Take note to Nintendo, please stop making Mario bosses die in three. It's one of the stupidest concepts that you keep running with. Anyway, this game doesn't do that, and I appreciate it for that. And I do like the interactions between the different kitty litter characters because they all seem to have a bit of personality. They have their own particular trope they all run under. So you're not going to come in here and get, you know, this deep, intricate kitten character that you never expected to see in a platformer. No, this game is definitely by the books, but it's good by the books. I mean, I'm not going to cry about it, and I didn't cry about it. I just laughed and enjoyed myself.
It's not setting out to change the world. It's just setting out for a good time.
Exactly. And I'm here for a good time. So there you go. And hopefully anyone who's listening to this would also be in for a good time. Because while I admit game consoles, especially the Switch, are freaking littered with platforms. Littered. That does not mean that Super Lucky's Tale, or rather new Super Lucky's Tale, does not have a place within that, you know, that roster of titles. I found this game to be a great time, and I do believe that it would be on my list of games I would pick up. Like I said, however, the main concern that people need to hear, if that's what they're interested in, is knowing that this game is not hard. It's just fun to play. And that's a good thing, but I know some folks, like me sometimes, come in wanting to get their head beat down so they can actually claw their way up from the bottom and feel like they overcame a challenge. You won't get that here, but you will get a good time and feeling like, hey, I collected all these cool letters. I got to unlock all the different worlds in the game. That was fun to do. And also there's some puzzles too on the main hub world, which I forgot to mention. Each world is a hub with doors that lead to the other worlds. But in the hubs themselves, you can also run around. You can find like hidden nooks and crannies that will lead to like bonus worlds that are just like good to pick up like hidden book pages. You will also just find hidden alcoves for coins, and what you can also find on each world is a shop, which I will admit I was kind of sad by this, but it is what it is. The shop is where you go to spend the coins you find throughout the levels to purchase clothing for Lucky. The clothing is purely aesthetic, does nothing but make Lucky look good. And that's the only use for the money that I've come across. It just made me kind of sad. I wish there was like a sort of mechanic where you can buy stages with the coin, which I love it when games allow you to do that, because I feel like Mario also set the precedent for that to be an annoyance too. I mean, you play all these Mario games, you run around collecting tons of cash. Mario 3, they even flat out put a dollar sign next to the amount of coins you had, and you don't buy anything with it. You just kind of have them, and then there's a one-up. I know I got a one-up. One-ups are all over the damn place. I want the money to do something else. Let me spend it.
No, I have 135 lives now. I don't need another goddamn one-up.
Exactly. Let me buy power-ups, which for the record would have made total freaking sense for Mario. You'd go to a Toad house, spend your coins to buy power-ups from Toad. I mean, it just makes freaking sense. No. Just choose a stupid box or whatever. Damn it, Mario. But I will give a credit that for Lucky's Tale. Yeah, it's just buying clothing, but at least you're buying something with your freaking money. And I appreciate it for that. And the prices of the stuff in the shop are heavy enough that they're not overwhelming, yet you also feel like you spent a good amount of money to buy this. So even though you might come out of a stage with like 400 coins, that one pair of overalls you want is going to cost you 800 coins. So you might need to do that on two stages to get that, which is fine, because there's a lot of stages in the game to earn that money. It's okay, and it feels good to spend it on stuff, even if it's cosmetic. I'll stop rambling, because if I don't, I'm going to keep talking about kitty litters and fur balls and spit shines and disco dashing, all that stuff.
Well, the game sounds really cool, so the big question is, $40 on the Switch, what are you thinking?
I think it is a buy-it title. It is a fun time, light time. Also good for if you have kids that want to get down with this kind of stuff, because, again, it has that sort of like youthful charm to it.
Nice. I really, really need to play this game on Xbox. I've had it for God knows how long, and I've, just like you, I've yet to fire it up.
Mm-hmm. Like, I think what ended up happening was, like, we were doing an R&P episode some months ago, and someone, like a listener, submitted a track from this game musically. And I heard it, I was like, I gotta go buy this damn game. This deserves money. And I brought it home, and was just like, I'll get to it. Soon. Never soon. Soon never came. And then I got a review code to play the same game. So I'm glad I got to at least play it with the intent being to give impressions to other people.
Nice. Well, next game to talk about is called Agony, developed by MadMind Studio and Megapixel Studio, published by Forever Entertainment, released October 31st on the Switch for $19.99. Agony is a first-person survival horror set in hell. You'll begin your journey as a tormented soul within the depths of hell without any memories about your past. Chris, tell us about Agony.
All right, Agony. So yeah, I was I was reading a little bit about this game, and it has a very storied past, and you know, set of releases and stuff. Oh, thanks, Chris, for tackling this. Why? I know, it's like, so anyway, this is a game that, like, apparently has been through development hell, and reading about it, I've read more about the different apologies that the developers put out there than, like, actual game content, which, you know, is always a good sign.
You have to give us some context on that, if you have it. Apologies for what?
For certain design choices that we're going to get into. But I like that Eternal Rage is here quoting me on saying it's garbage already.
But, oh boy.
This review's happening in real time.
Oh boy.
But no, like people after the initial batch of reviews came out and people like kind of were like, what the hell? Then they were like, I'm sorry, we didn't listen to the advice of our people, and like this one person that was in charge of design, like we did believe that they'd do a good job and they didn't. But anyway, that's all getting into the weeds about that. I recommend just doing some Googling about that. The actual game itself has, you know, I actually played it in order to, you know, get my own opinion. It is a first person thing. Survival horror is weird to say because there's not really a survival element to it. I would actually say it's kind of a slightly puzzle-based walking simulator that takes place in hell. Now, hell, of course, there's many different interpretations of it, and I think that given the amount of Bible verses that they throw in between, you know, on loading screens and stuff like that, that this is the Christian version of hell, which was, I think, made up well after the Bible is already published. It's kind of, I think hell has always been kind of like Christian DLC that people kind of mistaken for the main game. But anyway,
this is going to be a great review. Clearly,
so you're a
DLC.
So you're a guy. So you're a guy who has apparently died because, you know, it opens up with you going down a cinematic CG hole of, you know, like all tormented things and like, you know, mountains made of bodies and, you know, things with horns like roaring at you and stuff. And then you just kind of get unceremoniously plunked into this setting where you start rambling about the Red Goddess and how you have to find her. And she's going to make everything all right, apparently. But after talking to a few more tortured souls, then you find out that kind of everybody has this idea of the Red Goddess and they're all kind of trying to seek her out. But, you know, mostly that's just they're in hell, so they're being constantly tortured, so they aren't making much headway. You, on the other hand, I guess you got the wherewithal to actually stand up and move around and avoid things. So the whole first part of the game is all about, like, you know, you try to approach this. Now, understand that anytime I'm trying to describe something in the game, it's only my best interpretation of what's happening. Because what's really happening is that you're just walking through a bunch of tunnels and like and caves and stuff like that, and looking at you know, set pieces that are just, you know, body horror type stuff, and you know, like giant fingers on top of this hill. What are they from? I don't know. And or, you know, talking to a bunch of naked people in various states of evisceration.
Nice.
But I suppose you're, you know, initially trying to reach this like throne room or something like that to appeal to the red goddess. But like I said, you walk around, you know, you might stop by a prison and there's like torches you can grab, and you can you know, you kind of have to burn your way through a couple of things. And, you know, like I said, there's there's almost nothing in the game to really tell you what you're doing, what you're supposed to do next, how to do things. And, but, you know, like I said, I was able to figure it out enough to get, you know, past a few, like, different set pieces and things like that. So, you know, the backgrounds do change eventually, but you're going to spend, like, the first 30% of the game. And I'm going to describe, I thought about this days ago, because I was like, how best to describe what this game looks like for the first many hours. It's basically, okay, so you know when you go into the grocery store and you see like the, you know, there's a glass counter and like in the butcher shop area and you see like all these different cuts of meat, mm-hmm. and you know, it's just like this sea of red. Well, if somebody dumped a bunch of ketchup and like jam on that, that's what this game looks like.
So a lot of red.
You could basically play this on a Virtual Boy.
Oh, jeez.
That is not a positive sign.
No, but still, like, the monochromeness of it, it makes it, like, unappealing on a level that it's weird because, like, you know, you go into a game like this and you expect to see, like, you know, a lot of disturbing stuff and, like, you know, you expect to get, like, maybe some scares and things like that. But the thing is about it is that you just get into this area and it just looks like red and lumpy and meat, and like you just kind of walk around it like, you know, you don't know if you're walking across a rack of ribs or red hot lava. It's like and your character moves so slow, like I think
agonizingly slow.
Have you ever played Eternal Ring on the PlayStation 2?
I don't think I did, but I'm familiar with it.
It's one of the earliest ones, and it was like, I don't know, it's really, really slow. I'm not going to try and draw parallels between.
Yeah, you're digging out the classics there, Chris.
Yeah, this thing is, yeah, it's unconscionably slow, but you can actually, like, you know, you can run a little bit in the game. You have this little lung meter that, you know, but you kind of want to reserve that for if something like pops out at you, which, by the way, is not very often. You eventually get into, and I mean eventually, you get into areas where there are, you know, they look like the demigorgons in Stranger Things, like the, you know, people, but their heads split open to be a mouth. And yeah, they, you know, they'll come after you, and you can do different things. You can hide. You can't fight them because there's no real fighting in this game, as far as I can tell. You only get a torch, and you can hit things with a torch, but it doesn't do much. Like, you know, it lights things on fire. But you can hide from them, and you can, like, distract them, kind of, I suppose. Like, you could throw your torch, and, like, they might go after that. In one instance, and I actually did like this, you can, if there was one at the cliff side, and I was able to go up and push it off the cliff. So, just shove it. And that was kind of fun.
Nice.
Even though it climbed right back up, because these are hellspawn demons, and, you know, they obviously aren't going to get killed by such things. But that's the thing about getting killed, is that if they, you know, do catch you and you're not able to get away from them, then they murder your body, and then your soul just pops out of the body, and then you get into a kind of flight sim mode. And if you can find another body of another tortured person or soul or whatever, like within a half a minute or so, then you can possess them, and then you can actually, like, you know, keep going. And in fact, if you died you can die strategically, in the sense that if you die in like a room where the thing's still munching on you, and, you know, you've taken over another naked person, then you can, like, sneak past them and, you know, keep going.
There's a question I wanted to ask, though. It's probably going to answer yourself because you mentioned it. When you get a new body, do the bodies tend to bring their own abilities with them, or is it just like another, just coming back to life with the same way you always were?
The thing is that you're supposed to be able to haunt like bigger bodies eventually. Like, there's a skill tree that allows you to do that after a while. But initially, you're only able to like possess other humans. Certainly, you know, if that opens up, it didn't open up for me. So, but that's what I've been told, is that you can like, you know, possess bigger things. So I'm sure you can eventually become a Demogorgon, and that's great. Like I said, you know, it's, hang on, lost my train of thought.
happens so to the best of us.
Yeah. So it's really what the game's all about, is it's not about trying to become more powerful or doing more things. It's just about going around these different places and picking up items and using them to get into other places. And interestingly, like, this is, so what I can, from what I can gather, okay, so the game initially came out and it had some censorship stuff to it. And one of the things they tried to do to be, to try and quell the bad reviews is to come out with an uncensored version. And I think that the Switch is actually the uncensoriest version. I looked at some gameplay on Xbox One and PC, and I noticed that things were very different. And,
interesting. I know PC released an uncensored version, but consoles didn't. It'd be interesting if Switch got the full uncensored version, though. That would be interesting.
It has to have. It can't get any more uncensored than this game. You can pull on like naked bits, including like, you know, just pretty much everything. Like, you can look down and see your own tackle like waving around.
Damn.
And it's like, it's bloody and gross, but I mean, it's there. And like, everybody in the entire game is naked. So it's kind of like, you know, and the thing is, nothing in the, you know, the game is not visually appealing. Like, the people, the models of the people don't look good. It looks like, you know, very old stuff, like PS2 maybe. And so it's not like shocking, and it's not like, I don't know. It's one of those things where it's like, it's so ineffective at what it's trying to do that it's not even offensive.
Wow.
Like, I mean, obviously don't play this one with your parents in the room, but it's just like, it was one of those things where I could see where they were going, and I certainly, it could have been very interesting, I think, if you would have, like, if it would have had more direction, like telling players what to do and maybe add some contrast. Because here's the thing, is that you make it dark and bright, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when you do so, it's one of those things like adjusting the brightness on your TV sometimes. It's like what you're you raise it because you want to see stuff, but what it's doing is it's washing out everything else. So it's a game mm-hmm. that's either dark or washed out. So this, and like I said, you know, I tried to derive as much fun as I could out of it, like, you know, trying to figure it out, trying to get into the lore. Well, the lore is mostly in pages of stuff that you pick up in like really secreted off areas. And, you know, it's just one of those things where it's like, oh, and the other thing about it is that there's a lot of instant death traps, but they don't show what happens to your character. You just walk in, you see the trap, and then it goes to the load screen. Like, it plays a cinematic that you cannot skip, where it shows your soul descending further into hell or something and getting eaten by a minotaur or something. And that cinematic actually is not even CG, I think, because it glitched out on me once. And I'll get to the glitches. This review doesn't need to be this long, but it takes you through a cinematic and then reloads the entire game for an instant death thing that you have to learn how to avoid. So, you know, the trial and error-ness of it is not great because you have like this full minute and a half of waiting around to even get another shot.
Jeez.
At doing a thing that's going to kill you instantly unless you figure it out. So, the glitches. So sometimes, you know, like I said, people are naked, but sometimes, like, the game will decide they have hair and then not hair, and then hair and then not hair, and then a face mask and not a face mask. And, like, And there's like different things, like when you're moving through the background, for one, if you try to jump, you usually will have to wait for it to load. Like, because it's doing that thing where like you're playing a PC game and your computer can't handle the graphics settings, you know? So it goes to where it's like, yeah, it's like that all the time. Like, jeez, moving and looking around, like, I raised the sensitivity, which was fine, but yeah, sometimes it would just have to wait and load like a few extra boulders here or there, while I was looking around. And yeah, like, straight up stuff would just glitch out, and like, you know, pieces of people would be missing, but not in a gory way, in a, like, you know, this person's arm has just disappeared for a while.
Yeah.
Things like that. So, I mean, I usually find that stuff really amusing, but this game is so joyless that it's really hard to, like, even laugh at it. Because it's just kind of murky and, like, eh. So,
well, for $20, I know it was originally $40 when it came out, down to $20. What do you think of Agony?
Yeah, that was another thing that they did, is lower the price in order to get more people to play it. Look, I mean, I'm very forgiving about games, but I'm going to give this one a miss it. Unless
a rare deny it from Chris.
Because it's not that it's not my style. Like, that's the thing, is I want it to be sold into like being into this type of game, because, you know, like, murky and gory and things like that, it's not usually my thing. But even I say that there's ways to do murky and gory to make them interesting and, like, at least visceral and, like, you know, disturbing. Whereas this game is just too kind of slow and broken to do anything that it wants to do. I'm not saying that this developer is hopeless. I actually would like to see them do something else, you know, take all the notes, build a completely different game, because they did have some visual and some, like, storyline things that were interesting. And so I'm looking forward to seeing what this developer can do next. I just want them to stop trying to get this one to work.
Yeah.
So, no, I'm going to say deny it for $20 for sure.
Now, Dark Mika says they are making another game called Succubus. I did hear that one. I'm not sure when that's coming out or if it's out. I haven't followed that one too much, so I'm not too sure.
Opposite of Agony. Succubus. Pleasure.
There's a Succubus mode in this game, but I didn't check it out. I think it's just another difficulty mode or something.
Maybe. Anyway, next game to talk about is called Skybolt Zack, developed by Devs Must Die, published by Green Man Gaming, released November 7th on Steam and Switch for $19.99. Skybolt Zack is a brand new fast-paced arcade gaming experience. With his rocket punches, Zack leaps from enemy to enemy, destroying anything standing in his way. Match the color of the enemies with the buttons on the gamepad to rid the world of Dr. Kaz's robot army. Pernell, tell us about Skybolt Zack.
Well, the first thing I want to say is that Skybolt Zack may well be one of the rare and only times that a Facebook ad has done its job. I'm sorry to say it out loud, but hey, maybe hope that means that the company who made this game is hearing this and going, huh, money well spent. Because that's how I learned about this game's existence. That is why I was interested in the inquire about a review code, and that is why I was able to eventually play it. And my takeaway from this game is that it is really freaking cool. It is something that I did not see coming in the sense of the way it works as a whole. So the idea behind Skybolt Zack, you're a guy with freaking giant punching fists. As a story, I don't care about it. And most people playing it probably won't either, because they want to get down to the meat and potatoes. Those meat and potatoes is a branching map. Think like here's a node that counts as a stage, and then there's like nodes coming off, lines coming off of it that go to different nodes and so on and so forth. Now, when you start on a level, well, I'll go to how the nodes break down. I'm actually going to describe an actual stage first. When you go to a stage, Zack can only do a few things. He can jump, he can dash, he can run, and he can punch. Now, punching is done by using one of the face buttons to strike a punch with the colored button that matches the enemy on the screen. So, for example, a blue enemy will be linked to the X button. Yes, I've been looking at the controller right now because I'm really bad at these buttons. But the blue will get fed to the X button, which means when you see a blue enemy, you want to mash X. At that point, Zack will dash towards that enemy, and then depending on the direction that you were holding when you told him to go attack him,
he will then launch off in that direction after hitting the enemy. And what this entails is that every time you see an enemy with a different color on it, you press the button that color matches to attack him next. So what this results in is a constant stream of you going from enemy to enemy to enemy to enemy to enemy, beating the crap out of stuff. And the best part of all is if you play your cards right and you do the levels the way that they honestly intend for you to do, you'll never land on the ground for the entire stage. You'll never hit the ground.
Nice.
And that sounds weird, but it's really freaking awesome. You're not going to be pulling it off early on because this game is not easy in that regard. But when you master it and get better at it, it feels really good to do. Now, the stage design and the aforementioned nodes play into this as well. So when you start a level, you'll start at the beginning point, and the nodes that they branch off the stage correspond to the difficulty of the stage and the exit within the stage that leads to that departure zone. So if there's a line leaving a node going up, that means that's the hardest route on the stage to take. So you're going to be playing the level with the intent being to constantly go up and to the right, knowing that at the exit gate up there is how you'll get to that node path. If you can't make that route and you just don't pull it off, there are typically medium and easy exit points as well. Those lead to different stages, but at the end of the level, you'll get a lower score because higher difficulty exits result in better multipliers for your actions on the level itself.
Obviously.
But honestly, it honestly works well in that regard because it's almost like how you would play Super Mario World and just blitz those stages, but then when you wanted to actually get back to the nitty-gritty, go back and look for the secret exits. It's that kind of mantra. You know, I can beat the level, but I'm going to go back later and try to get to the red exit gate because that leads me to the, you know, stage 2A, which is the harder route. You know, you're not restricted from going back to old stages, so you can do that as much as you see fit. I will say one detriment, which isn't really a bad thing, because if it was a bad thing here, it would have to be a bad thing with Lucky's Tale, and it was not there either, which is that Zack's abilities are what they are. You're not going to get a bunch of upgrades. You don't get new abilities and moves. You'll just be going to those stages, punching those dudes, and you'll come across enemies with different gimmicks over time, like enemies that fired bullets of different colors, so you're like punching the bullets as they come out in different colors. Sometimes you'll fight enemies, for example, that are wearing armor. So you'll break the armor with one color, and then you have to immediately notice that they are a different color underneath, and then press that button to continue the assault. You'll be basically just making use of different gimmicks that are meant to tax you on the use of that gameplay mechanic. But it's done extremely well, and it's a ton of fun to play. It's a great adrenaline rush, and most importantly for the feel of the game is the fact that as you play the game and you are punching the crap out of stuff, if you can maintain momentum and just keep killing dudes without breaking combo, you have a combo gauge that will go up. Aside from the fact that that will make your score better when you beat the level, it also changes the music, rather the music tempo and the intensity as it goes up. So when you get to like a 60 combo, and the music starts like a bam, like rock music playing and everything, you're not going to want to break combo because you're going to lose the cool licks. It just makes you feel more into the game and more like you want to keep that momentum going.
So
the game
almost sounds like a rhythm game.
It kind of feels like it. I mean, it can't be a rhythm for, say, as far as the music of the game goes because there's no beat to play to.
Yeah.
But I will say, as you get better at the game and you start noticing enemy patterns and how you're hitting stuff, you'll probably come to find a rhythm to when you're, how you're hitting dudes. Like you go boom, 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 boom. And you're like, you might just know. Or it might be a moment where you're hitting a guy that requires multiple hits to take out, but you might see stuff coming at you, you need to deflect or something. So you might go boom, but like you'll get a rhythm going as you're hitting the guy, then reflecting, hitting the guy, then deflecting, you know, stuff like that. It's a great game, and it feels different too. That's always something that I give extreme kudos to when I review games. If a game feels different in a way that I can't really think of too many other games that do, because I've played games where you attack enemies and repel off of them, but not to the level that this game does. This is its own beast, and I think it deserves a lot of kudos just for that, if anything. And it's just more so because it's also fun to play.
Nice.
So I leaned in when I said that.
Well, for $20, what do you think of Skybolt, Zack?
Buy the hell out of it. Just be ready for a challenge, but buy the hell out of it. It is so worth the money.
This honestly sounds like something I would have to pick up on Steam over Switch, just because I wouldn't be able to know the buttons on the Switch.
If that makes sense.
Because, you know, the buttons are backwards compared to Xbox. Like, Y and X, A and B are both Switch, so anytime a game comes out on the Switch that I have to press certain buttons, I am always hitting the wrong ones.
Oh, here's something worth mentioning, too, just for the humor's sake of it. So, like I said earlier, they do correspond to buttons like we're talking about, and the enemy colors also match the buttons on the controller. But you can go in the options if you really want to fuck yourself over and just change all the enemy colors, too.
Oh, man.
You can make the B button blue. Why would you do that? You are insane, that's why. But you could do that if you wanted.
Well, customizability is always good.
True, true.
Yeah.
All right, well, next game to talk about is called Ritual Crown of Horns, developed by Draw Distance, published by Feardemic, released November 7th on Switch and out of Steam Early Access for $19.99. Ritual Crown of Horns is a slaughterhouse, a violent, fast-paced, weird Western with an attitude, a unique blend of classic horde modes, base defense games, and arcade top-down run-and-guns. Chris, tell us about Ritual.
All right, Ritual. Well, happy Halloween, everybody. I'm doing two horror games in the same podcast.
Timing.
Yeah, I know. It's fine. So, yes, Ritual. So this is a game about a cowboy guy whose name escapes me. And he basically is a famous kind of like cowboy rootin' tootin' shootin', you know, outlaw type guy, for which in the world that he occupies, they've been, you know, they write dime store books about him and things like that. So maybe kind of a bit of a John Wayne guy. So he is killed, like, in the presence of a witch who, you know, he gets killed by zombies or whatever. And this is a game wherein the undead do roam rampant. It's kind of an alternative history, if you will. And maybe, because, you know, the year is 18XDX, you know, something could have happened. Yeah. But anyways, so the witch, whose name we initially just get as witch, and even after her name is revealed to be something else, the game still just refers to her as witch.
Hey, whatever works.
Yeah, she revives the guy, and she's like, hey, I revived you because I think I can get some use out of you. I would like for you to start shooting these zombies while I go around the world, like, basically performing rituals and, like, getting rid of, you know, lots and lots of zombies at a time in an effort to take down the government, which is part of the story. So she's kind of a voodoo libertarian. And sure enough, rather than try to sell you on cryptocurrency, she has you, basically the stage is set where you run around the stage and shoot undead creatures of various ilk as she stands in basically the center of the stage and does, you know, her thing for a certain amount of time. So it's basically a little bit of a tower defense game. Not really, I guess, since you're not really setting up obstacles, but it's like, I think they call this a horde type of game.
Yeah.
Like a horde defense. The only, funny enough, the only game I can really directly compare it to is Witch and Hero. Because that's kind of like what that is. Basically, if the zombies reach her in the center, then you're done. If she dies, you die, of course, since you're being reanimated by her in real time. And then once you defeat the enemies, then the stage is over, and then you get to move on. Now, after the first few stages, you know, you start off in, I think it's Kansas, just somewhere right smack dab in the middle of the country. It opens up a hub where, you know, she, like, provides you with lore, and, like, you can collect journal entries, or actually pieces of those different dime store books that star our hero, and I guess that's just world-building stuff. But eventually, you unlock, through, you know, the playing a few different levels, you can unlock the God of Guns, which they she had this thing about how, like, people worship guns in this part of the West, and I was like, oh, so that's, like, you know, current real life. Because that is a thing. There actually are gun cults. You should look them up.
Yeah. The NRA.
But yeah. Well, no, like, like actual religious, like people do bring their guns to church and worship them.
Yeah, the NRA.
Yeah, yeah. But I'm saying,
what a world.
Within the NRA, like they literally dress in robes and stuff. Like I'm saying, it's a real, like, real thing, not
but
just
supposed
a
to keep
metaphor.
Warm, man.
Yeah, exactly. Keep those guns warm. Yeah. Anyways, and the God of Guns, by the way, I should point out, is hilariously, like, basically exactly Sam Elliott.
Nice.
Like, the guy from the intro to The Big Lebowski. The big, like, brushy mustache and stuff.
Oh,
like
yeah.
That. Yeah,
I love
you
Sam
know
Elliott.
The guy. Yeah, it's basically a portrait of him as the God of Guns. Well, he serves as your smith, and he basically, as you go through different stages, you unlock more weapons, and then he kind of deals with your loadout. And so you can talk to him, and you can equip three weapons at once and switch between them, and you know he's your guy there. And then there's another person who deals with magic spells that you get to use in the game, and you know there's a whole bunch of different ones there, and I think you only get to choose one at a time. So like the initial one that you get is like this it looks like a ninja star, and it basically forms a a barrier around you that buzzsaws all the enemies as you run into them, which is very handy. And then from there, you can branch out into three different trails that go all across the United States. So you can go, you know, east to the quote-unquote civilized east, which is just, you know, lots of towns and stuff. And then you can go north, which is icy. And you can go west, which is the wild, wild west, as it were. And I noticed that, like, Arkansas and Texas and, like, down south are, like, you know, you don't go there, so I imagine that's probably like the last stage that you go to, because I mean this kind of game has to end in Texas, I'm just saying.
Yeah.
So yeah, the actual gameplay of it is what really becomes interesting, is because, you know, it's just it's all top down, and your character moves around with the one stick, and with the right stick, you aim a reticule, but you have to hold down the L button in order to target enemies. Otherwise, you can't fire. And you fire with the right shoulder button. So you're, like, constantly, like, basically aiming at enemies and firing. And the different weapons do different things as far as, like, how... Because it's all about crowd control. So, like, your starting pistol will shoot 6 shots, of course, and you aim it at one enemy at a time, and the game, helpfully, if you hold it, it's not even a second, but like once you target the enemy, if you see a red skull appear, that means that you can get a critical shot and, you know, one shot the enemy. But if you just sit there and blast away, then you can get them in like 2 or 3 shots. Mm-hmm. So it's whether you want to sit there patiently and go pack, you know, pack, 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 or you're just like blam, 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 you know, and try and clear them off that way. And then you get a shotgun, which of course has the wider range, you know, a triangular reticule. And then you get a crossbow, which can actually shoot through enemies and thus hit, like if you're facing down a line of enemies, then it can take them all out at the same time.
Nice.
In a straight line, yeah. And then you get rifles, which have different effects too. And you know, all these good old Western, you know, weapons, but, you know, super powered for video games. And the thing about it is that the game has a great way of, like, not letting you get away with simply running out there and fighting all the enemies and then that's it. This game is actually really challenging. So if you, because like I said, if you try and go out there and just shoot them all with the pistol, they will overwhelm you. And if you get too far away from the witch, then, you know, there's barriers around her that, you know, they'll try and break down. There's like wooden doors and stuff. She's usually inside a building or something. And then there's like magic barriers that only you can pass through. And that's your way out to handle them. But yeah, if they reach her, then, you know, that's bad. And like, if you leave part of the stage unflanked for a while, then they'll break through those barriers and start pouring in. And even though the stages only last like 3 minutes, you might end up in a situation where, despite your best efforts, you're there in the building right next to her, gunning down lines of enemies that are coming at her because they've broken down enough barriers. And there's like 30 seconds left on the clock, and you're like, oh God, I need to survive this. And because you have your own life bar too, but it's, you know, you can only take a few hits yourself. Yeah. And Like I said, they scatter magic things around the level, like a thing that lets you reload like instantly, so you can just really machine gun down like some enemies, and they have stuff that lets you run super fast. Health restores, which my one complaint about this is that since it's a very bloody game, since, you know, enemy blood stays on the ground, it's the exact same color as the health pickup. So,
oh, God.
You're like, you have to look for these, like, the shine of it, basically, and in order to run into it, pick it up. But overall, like I said, you know, I was expecting this game to be, like, kind of tedious, but it really freshens it up, like, you know, pretty much all the time. And it's really tough to actually win a stage the first time through. But because the hordes are predictable, you can always get back into that stage and try to head them off at the pass. And, you know, also you can develop your own strategies to get through the stages. And so there's always an element of strategy to this game, which is always needed when it comes to, like, this style of gameplay. Yeah. So for that reason, I kind of appreciated it. Only things, you know, like, It's got a pretty cool soundtrack, but for the most part, like, between stages, it has that kind of, like, that Western, like, horror ambience sound, like, basically sounds like kazoos being pitched down to bass, or, like, just somebody, like, sawing a tree in slow motion and things like that, and I'm like, oh, God. But once you actually get into the stages, it's got a cool rock soundtrack, which I liked, and yeah, a lot to like here.
Awesome. So for $20, what's your verdict?
$20, basically, you know, that does put it to a much higher price point than what you'd normally expect from something that's in the tower defense or even the horde defense thing, like Witch and Hero I mentioned is like $4, I think. But there's a lot of polish that went into this game and a lot of interesting things that you can do. And it, you know, what I like is that once you spread out the map and you can actually see all the parts of the United States that you can go to, you can preview each level and, like, it'll show you what the level looks like and what you can get out of it. So if you're going for, like, that next big gun, then it, you know which level it's in, so you can work your way out there. So I really like the extra touches they put in this game, and I think $20, it is worth it, especially for fans of, like I said, the kind of almost twin stick shootery kind of, you know, it's basically twin stick shooter slash, you know, tower defense. But, if that excites you, then yeah, go for it. But that is what it is. So that's at $20, I would say it is as good as that for sure.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
All right. Next game to talk about is called Alwa's Awakening, developed and published by Elden Pixels, released November 5th on the Xbox One for $9.99. Use your magic staff and progress through a large interconnected world where you'll solve puzzles, fight enemies, and defeat bosses in order to help free the land of Alwa. Explore and uncover the secrets by using your platforming skills in this challenging and charming 8-bit adventure game. Purnell, tell us about it.
Well, before I go out and review one thought that just surprisingly and randomly came to mind, we got to get you a new live for review wrap-up. Like, sounds good. Sounds good. I'm like, maybe we should have to go, charmed.
Charmed.
It's just something.
It I
just
never know when you guys up. Are done. I never know, so there's always an awkward silence. I'm like, all right, sounds good. Moving on.
So just like, say something random, like, all right, so I just picked my nose, and that was rough.
All right, peanut butter, next game to talk about.
Yes, now we're talking.
Oreo so cookies, review- Alwa's Awakening.
Oreo, oh yes, there we go. Alwa's Oreo Awakening. This game, Alwa's Awakening, I originally played it back on the Switch, and it has honestly not left my recommendations list since that time. It's a fantastic game. It's very straightforward, and it's not too long either. I mean, it'll take you probably about 10 hours to get through it if you search for a bunch of all the stuff, the goodie bags and stuff. But the game at its core is a genuine gem. It plays in the form of a puzzle platformer. You play the role of Magician Zoe, who is running around this world. Honestly, the plot is almost what eludes me to, because I'm really bad at plots in games that are like of the classic variety. But basically, you are looking for four evil jerks, beating the tar out of them and getting their gems. And in the process of doing so, you'll ultimately save the land of Alwa. So The way Zoe gets things done is by way of use of her magical staff. She can swing it to bop dudes over the head, or as she acquires magical talismans, or crystals rather, she can cast spells. These spells are meant to be used more of a puzzling element. For example, I'm not going to go into all of them because there's not a ton in general, so it'd be more fun for you to discover them yourself. It's one of those games where they give you a little, but they have you work with it a lot, and it's fun that way. Like the first one you find is a kind of green gummy block, and the purpose of the gummy block is to be a block. You can use it to land on switches. You can use it to float across water once you upgrade it. You use focus water, and that's pretty much its purpose. It can also be like a stepping stone to get to higher ledges or block fireballs, stuff like that. But again, it's a simple object that you use for multiple things as you're trying to progress through the game. And there's two other spell types you can come across as well, and each of those has one upgrade item that you can find, which gives it more functionality and use. The world is an interconnected universe, and I don't want to say Metroidvania because it's kind of getting stale with some game usage, but I'm going to call it that. It is just an interconnected platform world. Multiple environments and areas that have puzzles to be solved and collectibles to be found. Collectibles coming in the form of just these little blue gems. There's about 99 of them. Have fun looking for that. the game, I mean, honestly, I find it to be a great time. It's not complicated. The map itself does a decent job of getting things done. There are warps around the map, so you can eventually come across ways to teleport between areas, a decent number of save points. So you'll never be too far away from taking a break if you need to do so. The music in the game is an absolute treat, composed by Robert Kreese. Again, I listen to this music in my free time, even now. Central Always theme, fantastic beat. The stone was like the stone. It's basically like a stone cavern in the lower right corner of the map. Anyway, the point is it's got great tunes there too. Fantastic OST. If you're a fan of like classic chiptunes type music, you cannot go wrong with this game. Period. Can't do it. If you do, feel free to tell the show. I'll yell at you. I can't recommend this game enough. It's one of those games that when people say, "What should I get on the Switch, Pernell?" it's on the list every time. That doesn't change because it's moved to other platforms. It belongs on those lists too. And something a sequel coming too.
There is a sequel coming. Always Legacy. It's on Kickstarter right now. The Kickstarter still has about, I don't know, 20 days left as at the time of this recording. So if you're interested in getting on that, chop chop. I'll put a link in the show notes so you could scroll down and look for the Kickstarter link and jump on there and check it out and back it and help bring the game to all the platforms.
Yeah, to that trailer, boy. Oh baby. it's definitely like more of the same, but they advance. It's almost like jumping from 8-bit to 16-bit, adding some speed to it. It's good. It is really good. Buy it.
I didn't even have to ask you. Wow.
I don't mess around with Always Awakening. Never did. And I also like, for the record, that in the intro of the game, they outright tell you, like, thank you for buying our game. It took us 2 years to make it. We enjoyed doing so. I hope you enjoy the game, too. Like, that simple shit feels so good to see sometimes. And it does. And I feel like in some respects, you can even kind of tell if it's just slapped on there for that fake goodwill versus we actually wanted to type that and tell you what we feel. Like, and I got that from this. Like, it's genuine stuff.
Yeah, the Elden Pixels guys actually stream on Twitch sometimes, too, and they just seem so nice. Really? I really like them as people. I'm going to second everything that that Pernell here said for what it's worth, because I reviewed it back when it was on Steam. And, I bought it as soon as it came out on Switch, too. I really love this game.
Yeah, it's a solid game. And for the people who are scared about the challenge, there are options to make it easier. They recommend not doing it because they want you to have the authentic experience. But if you're a pussy crybaby mode like me, you can put the easy settings on and have an easier time playing the game without ripping what little hair you have left out.
I've got none.
Me too.
I got some.
Oh, man. We're all getting old.
I'm back. My present back.
Anyway, next game to talk about is As Divine Kimura, developed by XCreate, published by Kemco, released November 7th on the Switch and PS4 for $14.99. After everything is upended when a transcendent being named Zadis appears and begins altering the world, the spirit deity sets out to gather the mystic orbs scattered throughout the various regions and restore the world. Teaming up with an unlikely band of both quiet and freewheeling female companions, what conclusion will they arrive at? Only the deity knows the answer to that. Chris, tell us about it.
Which deity, though? There's so many deities. Anyway. Yes, so this is another Kemco XCreate game, so it's great to be back in the saddle on this.
Yeah, they've been releasing first on Xbox lately, which is interesting.
I know, and I mean, I hate it, but obviously you're going to be happy about that.
I am very happy. Bring them all to Xbox. I love it.
Yeah. It's true, though, that they do come out on Xbox first, so I don't know. As long as they don't never come out on Switch, that's all I care about. They can come out for everything. I appreciate what Kemco does with their RPGs, and I always have a good time with them, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, that's it. Just kidding.
$15, your verdict. Yes.
Yeah. So this is a game in, okay, so Kemco and XCreate have this sort of, They have a formula for making RPGs, for sure. Like I said, they have three different types that they come out with, and I've on previous reviews gone into like the different types, but there's one particular subset that's a kind of 32-bit style one that really, it's got four characters in it always, and it has like different, it's mostly all about the external, not external, but like the different various mechanics that occur within the game and kind of like, QOL stuff and things like that. So, like, they have that, and that's what this is. This is the third, well, this is, one of many As Divine games that takes place in the world of As Divine, which, by the way, does not ever have a consistent map between games, including sequels within itself. Because we have As Divine Hearts, which has a sequel. I've covered, I think, just the sequel. As Divine Dios, and which deals with a displaced deity who gathers a group of girls to go and, you know, defeat ultimate evil. And then this game, As Divine Kimura, which also deals with an entirely different deity who has a different name and the exact same appearance, and he puts together a band of women to defeat the evil.
I sense a
theme. I know, but that's the thing, is that it's not a consistent theme. I have no idea what they are doing with these games. I think they just fully realize that it's like, we got a formula and it works, and we're just going to keep doing this. And we notice that it sells the most when we call it As Divine, so that's what we're doing. So yes, Shiki is the god of all the world. He created As Divine, much like the other one, then As Divine Dios, who also created the world. There might be a thing where it turns out that this guy is the other guy or in some way, because they're both silver-haired, blue-eyed dudes who had the same mannerisms, but not the same dress, because in this world, everything is basically like ancient Japan. Everybody's sporting like kimonos and whatnot, and all the music has the shamisens and those flutes, and I'm not going to dive too far into it because I'm very bad at naming traditional Japanese things, but that, once you see it, it's all over the place. It's like, you know, it very much screams like, you know, feudal Japan or so. And so he, basically the game starts off with the thankfully, for once, it starts without doing a scenery scroll and then just putting words on the screen. It actually starts with action and things happening. That's one thing that Kemco XCreate always does, is the scenery crawl with just text, like describing the world. In this one, he is a god, essentially, but then this other guy shows up and he's like, hey, I'm the god of destruction, but I've decided I'm just god now, and you have to go away. I've stripped your powers and stuff. And he's like, oh man, he stripped my powers. I better go take care of that. And then he, you know, gets beaten up, of course, very badly, and then sent to Earth. And there's no explanation at all for any of this. So I assume it just kind of unfolds as you play the game. Usually, like, there's some revelation in, like, the 11th hour in these type of games that explains everything. But he comes down and he befriends a little girl who is not a fighting character, but just, you know, somebody to... that he's basically helping her find her parents, and she has all these odd powers that, even though he's God, he doesn't really know too much about the world he made, so he kind of learns things as he goes, so it's one of those things where it's like the Almighty plays a man-child kind of situations. And yeah, as the game progresses, you meet more female characters. And like I said, when it comes to these kind of Kemco games, like, every character that comes by usually has their one thing. And in this one, you've got a lady who is a priest who, by the way, nobody believes that this guy is the deity. He just says it and they just laugh it off because they're like, oh, we've always worshipped this guy, the guy that displaced you, you know? So apparently he's changed things in the world, and that's part of why your guy doesn't understand a lot of what's going on in the world. But yeah, she's a priest in the church that should be worshiping you, but doesn't. And she has a bizarre affinity for cooking monsters and eating them.
Okay.
Which is, apparently monsters are typically inedible, but she's trying to become her church has to do with the kitchen of some kind. I don't know. But basically her thing is that she's like a gourmand, essentially, but for monsters, which are largely inedible. Then there's a girl who is out for revenge, and she believes that you're the deity that killed her her parents or her grandfather or somebody. But then she joins you after you save her, and then but she's got that side eye on you, of course. And then there's the lady who just straight up falls in love with you, like, immediately and to comic effect.
Nice.
But yeah, as you go through, you know, it's all... very charming, not especially deep. That's very, very typical of the Kemco X Create formula. Now, what this game, what it's all about, really, is what this game does differently than the other games mechanically, because therein usually lies the difference. So this one brings back the popular system of using weapons to basically augment other weapons.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, weapons eating weapons and gaining levels. Only this time they actually change it a little bit. For one, you can't just straight up change your item until it gains enough levels. And that actually unlocks the slots wherein you can put different augmentations. So actually leveling up your weapon more than making it do damage actually leads up to something, which is to say it allows it to be augmented further. And you actually have to collect items in order to do all this, basically. And so to me, I like that a lot because it really throws in a dimension into that item augmenting system that I think gives it more depth and more reason for existing. You can't just, you know, get 6 swords at the end of a battle, which is actually something that happened in some of the other games, that, you know, then you just sit there and, like, make your sword eat all those other swords, and, you know, you just spend half the time in the menu doing stuff like that. It really gives you more to chew on in that sense. And they also brought back the gardening system, which, as far as my experience goes, is something that they've done as far back as Antiquia Lost. Antiquia Lost, which, basically you plant, in the other games, you plant a seed and the seed becomes an item and then, you know, it bears fruit and, you know, that fruit can be used to increase your stats permanently. Well, in this game, they've improved that as well. So now it's that you can plant any item that is not an equipable or super rare item, and it can turn into any kind of stuff, any sort of thing. You could plant, like, an item and, you know, you'll have, like, a 75% chance of getting that item back twofold. That is to say, you know, you plant a potion, you might get a potion x2. But there's a 10% chance that you'll get the next strongest potion, and there'd be like a 5% chance that you get like this really good item.
And
they utilize the real world IRL timer rather than, you know, in-game stuff, so you can't cheese it in any way. Like, if it says it's going to take 30 minutes, it's going to take, you know, from 5 to 5:30 in your time. And yeah, it's really great because then once you, if you, you know, at worst, you can just duplicate the item and therefore you can just plant your extra item and try again. And the game actually gives you, I think it's like 24, you know, different blocks you can use. It's four different fields and each field has, three. So yeah, it ends up being 12 things that you can plant at any time. And so you can like sit there and basically try to luck out into getting really great items.
You want to know what else is really great? No Time for Games with his 20-month subscription.
Take your money.
Dang.
20 That's good. Months. That is insane. Thank
Has
you
this show
so
even
much
been
for
around for 20 months?
Hey, we've been around for almost 7 years now.
I know. I
We're
was
getting
there.
We're getting there.
I was in
old.
I don't know what my first episode was, but I know that I can go back to episode 50 at least.
Yeah.
Because I was there for 50. I think I don't know. I have to look.
I sort of way late to the game, but hey, it's been a fun time since I showed up.
Yeah, you're essential.
No, don't stop.
You matter.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, this game also brings back the lottery system, which is one of my favorites. It's just where you can spend items that monsters drop in battle. If you get enough of them, then you can like sit there and basically randomly, if barrel breakers or whatever, which is in the other As Divine games, which can score you a really powerful item from the beginning of the game. And there's also these jewels that you can either use to gamble or you can save them up and purchase really, really good items early on. And also, like a lot of the recent games, it has DLC that you can purchase. If the game is getting too hard, you can actually, you know, go in and buy some like extra boosts to different things, which I appreciate, but I usually don't end up needing them. So, yeah. But there are extra purchases you can make with this game if you so choose. And yeah, like, you know, I really like the style change. Like I said, the theme of the game, the whole like ancient Japanese look and feel, yeah, it permeates everything from like the dialogue boxes have flowers on them and like some nice gilded corners and things like that that look like, you know, like that, the look like that. The menu is actually arranged to where it looks like it could be like a Mahjong game or something like that. There's a painting in the background that looks ancient Japanese. Like, you know, just like I said, the music even changes, even though it's like the same like style of composition. Like they just threw in all these extra instruments and stuff. And I really like it. Like I said, it doesn't fit together with the other As Divine stories as of yet. I guess when I finish it, I'll be able to say whether or not it does. But, you know, these games are all designed to stand on their own, and I think this one does stand out as a very interesting chapter. And, I didn't even really get into the battles or, there's like now monsters that you can throw in, like, As Divine Hearts 2, and yeah, there's just a lot of new things that they do in the battles, like, grid-based targeting. So you're in a, your characters are in a 3x3 grid, and depending on your placement, it not only, you know, raises your strength and stats, or defense or whatever. All spells can only target a certain pattern, either a single character or like characters in a vertical line, characters in a horizontal line, characters in a block. There's all kinds of different moves there, so that adds this whole nother element to the battle strategies. And battles actually are pretty hefty in this game. Like, they start throwing groups of, like, 9 enemies at you, like, pretty much, you know, right from the get-go. So it's, the battles feel a lot more meaningful, too, and I really do appreciate that. But yeah, lots of new stuff in this one, and they're innovating in the right direction, and so, you know, for that reason.
Carnage wants to know if this one is as divine as the rest.
It is as divine as the rest. I would say
I hate Carnage.
It's fine.
Carnage is on fire.
Hey, that's what Kemco gets for using that name for
don't
five
encourage
different games.
Him
as divine blasphemy, here it comes.
Jeez. All right, $15 on As Divine Kimura. What do you think?
Yeah, I'd say this is definitely worth your money. Kemco X Create, I mean, they've always made games that, you know, even though they're budget RPGs, they are way more quality than their price tag suggests. And I think the only reason they're so cheap is because of quantity. Because there's just so many of them. They're like, well, we'll get your money one way or another.
Yeah. they got a lot of mine.
Crack their knuckles.
Me too. Even though I review them, like, I also purchase them, like, the ones that I don't review. So, you know, they got their hooks into me for sure. And this one is just as good. Like I said, it's innovating in the right direction. Every time a new Chemco X Create game comes out, like, practically, it almost always has something new and better about it than the last one. So, yeah, this one's definitely a good one. I say go for it.
Awesome. Next game to talk about is called Gun Crazy, developed by Ritual Games, published by Grab the Games, released November 12th on Steam for $4.99. Gun Crazy is a fast-paced and hectic arcade-style arcade shoot-em-up sporting old-school pixel art and a retro soundtrack. Purnell, tell us about Gun Crazy.
Well, Gun Crazy, this will be a very quick review, to be honest with you.
I've heard that from you before, and it's never true.
This is going to be the one time where it's true. You can time it. All right, starting now. Gun Crazy is a game where you play a character who I believe is named Ada as you run through four stages of gun blasting action reminiscent of the game Gunstar Heroes. Your character has a default gun that just fires a stream of bullets, but every once in a while when you destroy the right block or kill the right enemy, you'll get a gun power-up which will give you various types of bullets like a machine gun or a laser. These guns have a limited amount of ammo, and when the ammo runs out, you are back to your default gun. You can run, you can jump, you can double jump, and you can air dash or ground dash, your preference, to evade and blast through enemies. The enemy variety in this game is a little bit lacking, but it's kind of made up for with the variety of gun bullet patterns and just the joy of just like getting that sense of, like I said, Gunstar Heroes-esque, like, manic blasting and dodging action. Though I admittedly do wish that they used more enemy sprites in the game. But the game itself is also extremely short. I'm pretty sure this was, like, done as, like, a kind of, like, a fan or, like, project to get their feet wet, which I do believe they did a great job doing, because I had fun playing through it. Though I did have one genuine complaint, which is that when you beat the game, it gives you a congratulations screen saying thanks for playing, and it shows the short credits, and then it does it again and again and again, and I could not figure out how to get out of it without having to freaking hit the Windows key and back out. But otherwise, I did genuinely enjoy the game. The music is also good to listen to. It goes well with the game itself. I would honestly consider listening to it outside of the game, for at least stage 1 and 2, and the boss theme. So it's a genuinely fun game. It's extremely short, though, but honestly, with the price tag of $4.99, I'm not going to bat an eye at it. I think it's okay for that. If you just want to kind of support up-and-comer, play a decent, good game, give some feedback, and look forward to his next excellent project, which I hope has more stages.
Wow, that was a quick one.
See? All you got to do is challenge me, and I will break expectations.
Any negatives to the game besides the length?
To be honest, I can't really think of any. One thing I did notice, I guess this could count. So while you are dodging attacks and such, like I said, you can do like a dash. And this game does kind of do a sort of a, like, it rewards you for like barely grazing bullets when you do a dash dodge. So when that happens, these little crystals pop up. And when I would pick those crystals up, I would see numbers go up in the ammo counter. But I never came to understand what they did. It was just numbers going up. I'm guessing maybe it would have added ammo to a gun if I had a specialty gun at the time. But I was always using the default gun when I got it, so I didn't notice what it was actually doing for me. That was a slight annoyance. But I wager maybe someone who doesn't suck as much as I do at the game to go through all their bullets too fast might get to learn the truth, because I used up those bullets just as fast as I got them. So. But yeah, like I said, it's just the length of the game. I wish there were more enemy sprites types. That's kind of in that credits thing. That's pretty much it.
Well, then $4.99, what do you say about Gun Crazy?
I think it's a buy if you're down with running gun shooters. And again, it's good to just kind of support the guy because he did make a quality product and just now give him some money so he can actually put it back into making a lengthier, meatier game.
Awesome. And that was a sub 4 minute review.
Whoa. See, and that was after you asked me for anything I didn't like.
Yeah.
I was all done.
I'm proud of you. I'm proud of you.
Oh,
yeah, you did drag it back into that one.
I did.
Yeah, he did.
Kicking, screaming.
He's like, I got to ring this somehow. Can I get him to 10 minutes? If Gun Crazy could be any flavor of double mint gum, what would it be?
There's only two flavors. Mint or double mint.
One.
I can't. I guess we're going to sit here for 15 minutes while I weigh the pros and cons. And
spend 15 minutes discussing fucking gum, I guess.
We could. Now, you joke. We could easily do that. Let's talk about fruit stripe gum.
We could easily spend way too much talking about gum, but we're not going to do that because the next game to talk about is called One Person Story, developed by Lampogalovi? Lampogalovi?
I thought you were about to say, oh, crap, I just realized this game is sponsored by Double Mint Gum.
I butchered that name, and I apologize, but published by Dragius Games, released November 8th on Switch for $2.99. This is a personal story, just like life. It is a puzzle of obstacles and friendships, a roller coaster of downs and ups, pain and hope. Chris, tell us about One Person Story.
Okay, I'm going to try and be brief, but maybe not as brief as Purnell. Okay, so One Person Story is basically a room by room puzzle game where you play a ball that is bounce. Well, you don't play a ball, actually. I'm sorry. The main character is a ball that bounces perpetually off the walls, and your goal is to arrange the parts of the level you can control to get it from point A to point B. Those things can be anything from a barrier that, you know, if you push the button, then it toggles the barrier on and off, but then there might be spikes on the wall, and then you toggle the spikes on and off. The thing is, if you remove the spikes, it might make the line solid, and, you know, as your ball bounces, you have to time it perfectly where your ball is going to bounce off of the thing that you've made solid and not hit the spikes that you've now, you know, raised out of the thing. As the game keeps going, it makes your button do more and more things all simultaneously to kind of arrange the level, and you know, while it does that, you know, it gives you those little text-based like affirmations that usually are themed based on the level, like and I say usually, but yeah, basically there's it does a lot of good things that are, like, I think kind of neat tricks. Like, for instance, there's sometimes there might be a yellow ball as well as your pink ball, and the yellow ball might be doing something where if it's in an area that has a yellow background, then that makes a solid yellow bar go transparent so you can go through it. So the key is to keep that yellow ball in that field using the same mechanics as well as managing the pink ball while it's on the other side of the screen. And yeah, it goes on, like, the levels are really, really quick. They stack quickly. Like, you can get through about 10 levels in about 5 minutes. Or you might get stuck on one level where you spend an hour trying to figure out how to get past it. And, you know, it's just one of those things where it just builds in complexity. But it never seems to run out of ideas. So I really like that about it. The soundtrack I only know the one song that's in this game that plays just kind of perpetually, like Bubble Bobble style. And it's just this, like, this string quartet kind of song that sounds like a superhero movie where the superhero realizes he has superpowers and it starts bringing in the strings. It's like that all the time.
Nice.
And then past that, the game just has a, you know, it saves what level you're on, or you can choose to start on a different chapter. And the chapters happen, you know, every several levels or so, like between 8 and 10, it seems like. And you can start from there if you want to replay it, or you can start all the way from the beginning. But anytime you hit start, it just starts you off at the last place you left. And then, you know, that's pretty much the game.
Yeah, I put a couple of minutes into this one as well. I've been playing for a little bit. It's really fun. It gets complex, though. The later stages, it gets tough.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they really throw in layers of complexity. And like I said, the cool thing about it is that it's just this fast-moving brain game, because you have to figure out, like, okay, what all happens when I push the button? And, you know, a lot of it's even, like, timing and rhythm-based.
Yeah, a lot of trial and error.
Yes, lots and lots. And I mean, that's fine because, like, the next life, like, the ball, as soon as you die, the ball starts over again. Like, it doesn't even, it does not hesitate. So you're just constantly, like, you know, there's no punishment for losing. You just do it until it's done.
Yeah. Well, $2.99, what do you think of one person story?
Oh, yeah, go for it for $3. It's cheap. It's one of those games that, you know, they'll probably even knock a dollar off of that sometime. But, you know, between $1 and $3 is no thing. If you enjoy, you know, brain games like this that are all about, like, you know, strategizing and thinking ahead, like, this is quality. It looks great and it sounds good. And like I said, the complexity of the levels is absolutely there. You're not just going to waste time with this one. So go for it.
I agree with you. A lot of fun. And for that price, how can you say no?
Exactly. It's F it.
Bugger, why not?
Just buy it. Yeah.
All right. Well, that is it for you two. Thanks for being here. We're going to move on with the rest of the show. Do either of you have any final words before we move on?
Get 8 hours of sleep every night. You'll thank yourself for it. If you don't, you're fooling yourself. You should thank yourself for it.
Get 8 hours of gaming every day, because it's just as important.
All right, next game to talk about is called House of Golf, developed and published by Atomicom, released November 8th on the Switch for $9.99. Mini Golf comes home bringing with it 135 beautiful and challenging levels to master, the craziest crazy golf you are ever going to get. Checking this one out. It's been a while, but he's back. Tom Miller, how are you doing?
I am doing all right. Yeah, I'm back. It's been a minute. I hadn't actually seen the press release for it, and the promise of the craziest golf you will ever play, maybe they're shooting a little high on that one, but but I'll tell you what, I've always enjoyed a good miniature golf game, like, since whenever, like, Kirby's Dream Course for the Super Nintendo and stuff, and then, like, Golf with Your Friends recently, and so I was really excited when I saw that this was coming out, and it's cool to have, like, a... It's not a Switch. I think it's a Switch exclusive for console. Hopefully not forever, but I think it's also on mobile. But yeah, so it's a mini golf game. It takes place in a house, so the action of the game is like different parts of the house. So you're going to like the garage, the kitchen, the bedroom, the attic, or whatever. And you know, it's a pretty simple mini golf game. It doesn't have any like crazy gimmicks to it, but it is really well constructed. It took a little while to kind of get the feel for how the game mechanics work, but when I did, it felt really nice to, you know, to be able to bank around corners and do all the typical mini golf stuff. So the game itself is pretty robust, especially for like for the price point for $10. Like, you get 15 entire different courses, so that adds up to 135 levels. I did the math. and a lot of the levels are just really enjoyable to play. It's just a really chill, relaxing time. And I believe there is quite a bit of replay value to it as well. After you complete a course, like different coins show up at different parts of the course, so it gives you a little extra challenge if you want to do that. It apparently, I haven't gotten the chance to play multiplayer, but you can do up to 6 people, so it might be a kind of fun game to play in that way.
Good party game.
Yeah. There are a couple of hangups I had, and I'm hoping that the studio is working on this. I actually had it crash on me a couple times while I was playing it. And I don't really know what caused that, and hopefully we are in the age of the patch, so
yeah.
Hopefully that would be a thing that they fix. And there are some random little graphical glitches. Playing on the Switch, like playing in portable view was fine, but when I played it in docked mode, there were like, you could tell when the graphics shaders were loading up, so for the first few seconds the level would be all like flashy and weird looking. But after that it was fine. Yeah, and one other thing, I really enjoy the soundtrack. It's just like these cool, like chill funk vibes going on, and it actually kind of reminds me. There was a game I reviewed on here a couple years ago, Carried Away. It was called. It was like the ski lift building one.
Oh yeah,
and it sort of has a similar just chill funk feel going on. So I'm hoping that it does get a soundtrack release, because I'd probably check that out.
Nice.
Yeah, it's only like a 10-minute loop or so, so it would be a pretty small, well, maybe more than 10 minutes, but I liked it. It fit really well with the atmosphere of the game.
Funky is always good.
Yeah.
So what are the golf mechanics? Is it like the traditional mini golf where you hit A to choose your power and then hit A again to hit it?
Yeah, that's pretty much. I believe you hold the button down in this one. But yeah, you just basically calculate your angle and then, you know, they have a power gauge that you let go of. And you can really just whack it if you have it on the highest. Like, I don't think you ever really want to do it because it sends it like flying all the way across the room. And but there are a few holes where you can do that, which is always like getting an unintentional hole in one just by just nailing it as hard as you can. It's like, yeah.
Cross your fingers and hope.
Yeah. Maybe not the best strategy, but you know.
So you said there's 15 courses all throughout the house. Are they all good layouts? Any stinker courses?
Not so much. I think they're all, most of the ones that I played, I didn't 100%, but they're generally pretty well put together. The one criticism I have is that some of them do get kind of samey. I did have a couple times where it's like, I think I might have played this one before, but and I guess that's not helped by the fact that there are like basically five different worlds. So you have like the kitchen, the attic, the garage, the bedroom, and the lounge, I think. So you pretty much, I don't know. I enjoyed it, and there wasn't any time where I thought that the sort of repetitive nature of it was really, I don't think it ever really like killed it for me, but it is definitely noticeable.
Sounds good. Overall, $10. This one sounds pretty good. What are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I'd say try it. I mean, for the price point, if you're looking for a good, just a good chill game on the Switch, I think you're definitely going to be pretty well accommodated. And hopefully they are going to be patching it soon. And again, like the multiplayer stuff is there, and I haven't actually gotten the chance to try it, but I'm sure that would add more to the fun of it. And so, yeah, if you're looking for any of those things, I do think it's worth checking out.
Nice. I might have to pick this one up myself. I've been looking for another good golf game to play. It's not the glory days where Tiger Woods games come out every year anymore. I miss those days.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Anyway, Tom, always a pleasure having you on chatting about this stuff. Do you have any final words before we move on?
Oh, you know, it is autumn in the Midwest, and the leaves are turning, and everything is cool. And that's what I have to say.
All right, and finally tonight, we are bringing in our good friend Jacob Garner, and Cole's here too, just in case. I don't know what the recording schedule was, but you're here, Jacob's here, and he has a special treat for us, huh?
I mean, sorry.
treat might be the overstatement of the century. So if Polygon can put Fortnite at the top of their Game of the Decade list, overstatement of the century is fitting.
Well, you know, since we're going to go with hyperboles on this one, I actually had one prepared. This is the biggest fucking mistake for the SML podcast since Joe decided, I think I should do a podcast about video gaming.
Yeah, that was a bad moment in history.
It really was. Look what it's gotten us now.
Yeah. So, you want to do a movie review, huh?
Yeah, occasionally I do them. Tell us, what
is this movie? What is the movie? Who's it from? Give us the details. I don't have anything written down for this one. This is an unofficial review that you're giving to us to close out the show. So,
okay. So, as I've previously mentioned on the show, I play Dead Trigger a lot on my lunches on Facebook when I'm not busy doing the social media stuff, which is like this first person zombie shooter game. Like, there is a plot to it. I've already blown through the campaign. So pretty much now all I do is just missions, and you just kill zombies and you're trying to hunt for a cure. Well, somewhere along the line, somebody decided, wow, this game is pretty popular around the world. We should make a movie out of it. And Madfinger Games, who makes Dead Trigger 2, they seem to be cool people, by the way, they're like, yeah, totally. I mean, we're living the big life now. Resident Evil has them. House of the Dead has two. You know,
Blood Rain has a couple.
Yeah, no, Blood Rain has three. And well, also, I said a couple. Care, that's a couple is two.
Shut the fuck up.
Blood Rain has three, and also Blubberella is just the third movie reshot with a fat girl. So, because Uwe Boll's a weird guy. Yeah. So anyway, oh God, it's just like, I don't even, all right, you know what? I'll just start with the plot and then we could even bounce back a little bit to the history of how this film got made. So anyway,
we should note that there will be spoilers for this terrible fucking movie.
I just have to talk about the whole damn thing because it's awful. It's literally awful from start to finish. All right. Actually, you know what? Hell, the part that I was like, oh, you know what? I'll talk about the history of the movie after I talk about the plot. No, I'm going to talk about it fucking now. So, Madfinger Games, before the movie even got shot, read the script and were like, oh no, this is bad. And they were like, yeah, we don't want our names on this. Their names still appear on it as in the Dead Trigger, based on the video game by Madfinger Games. That's literally the only part. Madfinger never ended up doing any like marketing. I didn't even know the movie even existed until I saw it on sale on Vudu. And I was just like, oh, weird. That has the same name as the video game I play. Oh, wait, what? Like, so anyway.
How much was it?
I spent $5.
Oh, geez.
It was on sale. Yeah, I know.
Five's too much.
I still got ripped off. but anyway, so yeah. So Madfinger like was just like, oh, hell no. A week into shooting the movie, the original director got fired. And they ended up completely like rewriting the scripts. Madfinger was still like, no. And
oh my lord,
the movie apparently got released in 2017, but it never got a DVD release until this year, thanks to Lionsgate. God bless them. So the film,
yeah,
it's set in the near future. All right, actually, hold on, I'll even. God, wow. This is just going to be, I'm sorry, I apologize to everyone, because this is just going to be a stream of consciousness thing. So before I even get into the plot, the movie style, imagine somebody gave a bunch of high schoolers over the summer a ton of money to make their idea of what a good zombie movie would be, but their only frames of reference were Starship Troopers and House of the Dead 2 Dead Aim. Not even the theatrically released House of the Dead one. No. The one that went straight to DVD, and I think it got a premiere on Spike TV, starring Sticky Fingers. So,
oh my god.
Because legit, the plot of this movie is ripped from House of the Dead 2. With the whole, like, oh, well, we have to go to the original Ground Zero and get, you know, the sample from the zombie, the very first zombie that started the whole mess. If we can get it from there, then we can cure the whole zombie plague. Yeah, that's totally from House of the Dead 2. That's legit the fucking plot. So, anyway, in the near future.
So you watch House of the Dead 2 as well?
Oh, yeah.
You poor bastard.
I pirated. I will say this. I pirated it back in the day, but okay. I now legally own it.
Oh, Jesus.
All right,
you almost gained respect back, and then you just threw it out the window.
No. I'm on the SML podcast. I'm not allowed to have respect.
That explains so much these days.
Touché.
And besides, honestly, because it was just like, oh, wow, I don't have much to review. My plan was I was just going to start reviewing every single video game movie I could get my hands on. So my thinking at the time was like, oh, all right, well, this week I'm going to watch House of the Dead. I'll watch House of the Dead 2 next week. Oh, it's going to be a Blood Rain movie. Oh, I'll review Lara Croft Tomb Raider and wash out my brain for once. Like,
And yeah, instead you're here.
Yeah, instead I'm here. Instead I'm here.
So, tell us about the movie.
So, in the near future, it's like 2020, I guess. I don't know. Nothing looks different because it looks like it was filmed today. So, and it's just like, and all we know is that the world has been plagued by a bunch of zombie attacks, yet there seem to be a lot of cities still standing, mainly because they couldn't afford a CGI artist to add digital smoke, you know, ruined buildings, any of that kind of stuff. So all of the sets look like they were filmed in rented houses or condemned buildings that were about to be condemned, or maybe a university that was out for the summer. And yeah, so set in the future, you know, there's not much population, but there's still apparently plenty that, you know, people have video games and there are TV stations still going. I don't understand it, but okay. I'll deal with it. Sure. I'll accept it for this movie. And what ends up happening is that, you know, the military needs people to go into this, you know, ground zero thing. And so they start recruiting all of these different people from all these various backgrounds. Like, one is this criminal, you know, who's about to get busted. And it's really weird because it's just like, you see, like, local police, you see gangs, you see, like, parents, and everyone seems to obey the CSU, which I don't even remember what the heck it supposedly stands for. But it's like, you know, the main zombie fighting group. Like, and it's like, everyone's just like, oh shit, okay, all right. Like, you've got way more constitutional authority. I don't know what country I'm actually set in, but whatever. So anyways, like, so they pick up this guy who's like a criminal, this one woman who's like a female boxer, this girl who's wandering around and she's mysterious. Oh, by the way, of course she carries a sword, because of course she does. And this,
you need a sword in these movies,
right? Of course. Well, especially after Walking Dead.
Yeah,
you know, there always has. I think woman with a sword, between that and what was it called? Oni Chambara.
Oh, like, yeah,
Bikini Samurai Squad.
Yeah, which,
by the way, I own both movies.
There's two movies based on that.
Yeah, wow. I saw the first one. It was like, the first one was it was okay. Anyway. So yeah, and then they pick up this one random kid who is just like, he's hanging out by a house. He decides to put on his VR helmet and just hang out, even though he's outside of a house. There might be zombies outside, but oh, fuck it. I'm just so done with the world. I'm going to put on my VR headset. And like, the CSU people pick him up and he's like, yeah, I'll come. I'm not like I've got anything else to live for. By the way, he is the main hero of the movie, in case you haven't figured that out. So
beautiful.
All these people get brought to like the little CSU training thing. One of the guys who, of course, you know, is just like, oh yeah, I know how to use a rifle, blah, 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 blah. He ends up accidentally shooting himself in the face, like, during a training session. So he's automatically out. There's this, like, one minority dude who ends up getting bitten during a training thing. They hack off his arm. He's done. He's washed out. Of course he is. And then it's just like, well, here's who's going to be training you. And it's Isaiah Washington, who I'm pretty sure is the guy who was on Grey's Anatomy that got kicked off for being homophobic, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That is him, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was actually the most interesting character out of the whole movie. And he's in there for like 5 minutes. And then, you know, you have, you know, our main leader, Dolph Lundgren, you know, who is... I would just like to say I love Dolph. He's amazing. Like, I love every single movie that he's ever been in, except this one. I mean, he can't save it, and he just, like, he's just bored throughout. He fucking hates it. He knows that this is amateur hour. Like,
this is a paycheck to him.
It's literally, he has this look on his face like, well, at least my mortgage for my fifth house is going to get paid off. Like, you know, he does not give a shit. He's collecting a paycheck. Everyone else is fucking amateur hour, like, and he probably hates the directors. In fact, my guess is that he was just like, oh yeah, great, I'm in the zombie movie. And then that whole, like, 1 week, oh, everybody's fired thing, he was just like, oh shit, what did I sign up for? So anyway, so, you know, they're all training, they're getting, you know, they're working together as a team, they're getting better at shooting guns and running and all sorts of other stuff. Oh no! But there's a situation on Terminal Island.
Oh! Which,
yes! Which is this mysterious island.
Very as they are wont to be.
Yes, of course. And it's very mysterious because it's where the evil corporation used to do all of its lab testings. But they've received an email from somebody on the island. That
gasp.
There are
audible
survivors.
Gasp.
Hold on, Joe, you interrupted me. There are survivors!
Oh!
Yeah, okay, all right, now you gasp, yes. And they think they figured out the DNA sequence to solve this zombie plague.
Son of a
so,
bitch.
Unfortunately, guys, your training's cut short. It's go time now. And they just get on the thing and, like, they get on the damn island. And, like, there's a couple of spots where, like, you know, they're trying to pull, like, some shit from Aliens. You know, with, like, you know, all right, Marines, we're going to do blah, 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 blah. It's like, nobody fire until I tell you. Like, all this other kind of stuff. Like, there's even, like, one point where, like, somebody, like, the scene is just cut so damn badly, and you can tell Dolph does not give a flying fuck. Like, it's just, like, a couple of people start firing, and he's just like, yeah, fire, yeah. Like, even though he's, like, just 5 seconds ago, he strictly gave the order, you don't fire until I tell you to. He's just like, yeah, fuck it, recruits, just fucking fire. I don't give a shit. Where the fuck's my ham sandwich? Like, so then they finally make their way to the lab. And of course, you know, like, kids on the team are dying, like, left and right. We lose the techie Asian kid. We lose the female boxer.
No.
And also, we lose the criminal. Oh, no, because guess who they've run into?
Who?
Patient Zero.
What?
Which is where all of the CGI effects got blown into. And all it really is just a slightly taller zombie. Like, it's really just like, imagine you had, like, a bunch of, like, 5 foot zombies, and then somebody decided to slap some, you know, zombie makeup on, like, Wilt Chamberlain. You know?
God.
You know, that is Patient Zero. And of course, he's stronger. He's impervious to bullets because he is.
No.
Like, there's literally no reason for it. Like, there's none whatsoever.
Literal plot armor.
Well, it's that, or else maybe he's a boss.
Ooh.
If this was a video game. Ooh, who knows? No, it's really just really shitty writing. Anyway, so, you know, the girl who's the female boxer, like, she sacrifices herself to kill Patient Zero, and everyone runs off. And then the criminal who had the hots for the girl, he was just like, no! And he runs through the hole, and then he gets torn apart by zombies, and Dolph's like, ah, no, you should have stayed with the group. And the worst part about it is that, like, we lose, like, 5 or 6 squad members during this whole scene. I actually lost track of, like, who was still alive. It took me a good, like, 15 minutes to, like, actually be able to, like, start count, like, figuring out who was who again. Because nobody in this movie is memorable. You only identify Dolph Lundgren because he's Dolph fucking Lundgren. Like, everyone else is, they're all expendable. Anyway, so after that, you know, they decide, oh, well, we need to make it out of here. And so they do some other, like, zombie killing shit. And then they make their way to, to this abandoned church where they find that there's this pastor who's kind of running a cult, but he's got a bunch of followers.
Wait, Patient Zero wasn't the end of it?
No! No!
What the fuck?
Patient Zero is like two-fifths of the way through.
It's the fucking tutorial boss?
No! No, it's the end of the first level, boss. Like,
oh my god!
So, yeah, no.
I thought you were like wrapping things up there. I'm like, oh yeah, that was a fun 20 minutes, and instead, that's 2/5 of the movie, and there's more.
Oh, there's more. Oh, there's more. Because this movie drags. Okay. So anyways, they get to this church, and, you know, the church, like, the father's just like, oh, you have to save my people. And Dolph's like, I don't know if I can. And he's just like, but I need to use your truck. And he's like, but you can't use our truck unless you save our people. And he's just like, I promise I'll come back. And everyone in the fucking room is like, yeah, you're not fucking coming back. We know the score here. Like, just, you know, and they're like, all right, yeah, fine, borrow the truck. And while they're doing that, oh yeah, that's right, I forgot. They also picked up these like Russian twins, these two girl twins. They're called the twins, even though they don't look anything alike. And they're like decked out with like gold plated weapons and stuff like that. And apparently, they're like super zombie killers. They've even killed more zombies than Dolph Lundgren.
Ooh. Okay.
Yeah. So anyway. By the way, I've actually skipped over a bunch of like the plot in this, you know, partially for brevity, but
so because did they. So for
but part of it is just like I completely like it's just so forgettable that like I actually have to kind of backtrack. So, anyways, we also have a few scenes with Evil Corporation where they're just like. You know what? They can't find that cure because it turns out every household in the world has about 12 of our guns and we need to sell more guns and war is profitable. So they can't ever find the cure. We won't let them. So, and of course, we control all facets of society now. We control the TV, we control the weapons, we control the video games, and somehow we control the military, even though the military is just like, you don't control us. Yeah, we do. Anyway, so, while they're also on this island, they also were, wow, I actually can't believe I completely, like, skipped on all this part. So the general who actually sent them on this damn mission is just like, my daughter was part of the scientist team. Please, for the love of God, find her. And they're like, yeah, okay, we will. Don't worry about it. Well, it turns out all the scientists are dead. Except his daughter! And she's pretty cute. Who would have guessed? So... you know, naturally she's along. She's like, oh, I just managed to do it before they figured it out. All right. The thing is, she's actually slightly more believable than Tara Reid was as an archaeologist in Alone in the Dark. I will give her that. You guys didn't see Alone in the Dark?
No.
No.
Man, fuck you guys. You guys are the worst.
No, I think that makes us smarter.
Yeah.
Probably. Whatever. Anyway, so back to the church thing. All right. So, you know, Dolph's just like, oh, well, we have to get this car started. And one of the female soldiers that's with him is just like, oh, Dolph, you know, oh, be careful. I love you and I want to have your children. No, 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 no. And then, you know, they like briefly suck face for like 10 seconds. And then we also find out Dolph was bitten.
No.
And he's been taking this prototype cure, which unfortunately isn't really a cure. It's going to run out eventually. And he only has 2 doses left. And for those Aliens fans sitting at home, the medicine is called LV-420. That was the name of the planet that they land on in Aliens. Fuck you. Whatever.
I sighed audibly.
Just thought that was your breathing. Anyway.
No, I didn't walk up steps yet.
I don't walk up steps while recording the podcast. What are you talking about? Anyway, which of course, like, I'm one to talk because I know with my sinus shit, I'm always like, like, I hate listening to myself on this podcast.
I hate already, listening to you too.
That's fair. Like, I know my voice is annoying, but also I know my mic picks up all of my breathing. So I'm like, fuck this shit. Yeah. Yeah. Hey, you're a zombie at Dead Trigger. Good job. Wow. It was like I was back in the movie. So anyway, so they get to the church and, you know, like, blah, blah, blah. And like, Dolph takes, you know, main hero kid. He's just like, come on, help me start up the car. Blah, blah, blah. They try to start up the car. Meanwhile, Dolph's second in command is just like, everyone, put down your guns. Because, you know what? I'm in control now. And you better hand over, like, that formula shit to the evil company whose payroll I'm actually on. They're going to rescue me, and I'm going to live in Hawaii. Yeah, I know. That's you know, that's his plan. So anyway, they get the car started. Dolph comes back in and is like, yo, fuck you, and then knocks him the fuck out. And then, like, tells the preacher guy, yo, deal with him, and then we'll come back for you. And the preacher guy, all he does is just tie him up in a chair. And that's about it for right now. So anyways, they drive off. And, you know, to go... Actually, okay. All right, I'll get to that in a second.
Are you reading a synopsis while you're doing this?
No, I stopped and I unfortunately thought about how the, like, the logic of the film.
Oh, Lord.
And I just realized something.
See, that's your problem. You're thinking.
Yeah. So anyway, so they have to, like, stop for something, and then they end up in this place that looks like an abandoned Home Depot. And they, amazingly enough, have to fight in an area that has lots of cardboard boxes around and wooden pallets. And who else should appear but evil Russian guy? You know,
wonderful.
Dolph Lundgren?
No. He's good Russian guy.
Oh, that's a thing?
Yeah, I mean, like, I saw Red Heat with Arnold Schwarzenegger. He was a good guy.
Oh.
Yeah. And also Sean Connery and, you know, Sean Connery in Hunt for Red October. Sam Neill was a good guy in that one,
too. I probably haven't seen those in, like, 20 years.
Dude, Hunt for Red October is, like, still, like, an ace fucking film. I highly recommend it.
Okay, but back to the shitty film.
Anyway, yes. Back to shitty films.
My bad.
Anyway, so the two of them fight. And in this scene, you're going to see actually the only cool part of the entire fucking film. And that's what Dolph Lundgren, like, tries to do this, like, massive kick towards the guy. Ends up putting his fucking foot through the pallet. And, like, it's really not that impressive, but it looks cool. And then you suddenly remember, oh, shit. Dolph used to be in really fucking awesome action movies. Damn it. I wish I could be watching those right now. But no.
Universal Soldier is on Hulu.
Yeah, I own like, two or three of those films. The recent ones were actually pretty good.
I haven't seen the recent ones.
Stop interrupting with good films. Stop it.
Sorry, I'm selective about my entertainment choices.
I've seen some of the games you review. No, you're not.
Okay. Touché, once again.
Anyway.
Can I ban him?
Yeah, you can.
Oh. Anyway, so Dolph ends up winning the fight, and of course, like, evil Russian guy, he's actually, like, so exhausted after the fight, like, he hasn't really been, like, there's nothing to show that he's actually been, like, really had the shit kicked out of him. Like, he's not bleeding profusely anywhere. He's just leaning up against the boxes. Oh god, I'm so tired. And of course, who else should appear because of the ruckus in Home Depot but zombies, and they eat him. And then
the ruckus brought all the motherfuckers.
Yeah. So anyways, around this time, we get introduced to this really terrible song that is like if Drowning Pool from like 2002 got hired by the U.S. military to make a song about how tough, you know, American soldiers were, and Drowning Pool only got like 5 lines in, and we're just like, yeah, fuck it. Yeah, we're not interested in like writing the song anymore.
So it's Five Finger Death Punch?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. Fair enough. And then it's just like the director's just like, oh, shit. Movies are supposed to have music in it. Damn it. Okay, I'm not Stanley Kubrick. Shit. Okay, we can put music in this. Okay, I'm just going to put this on loop for like the next 15 minutes. Hope you like it. Yeah, nobody likes it. My Lord. Nobody likes it. It is fucking awful. I wish I could dig it up. And I tried real hard to remember like the beginning lyrics to it, but I think my brain forced myself to forget it. So I'm kind of thankful for my brain on that one.
Yeah, probably for the better.
So anyway, so they escape from that. The truck runs out of gas, and then they're just like, oh, Dolph's like, oh, well, there's only one place left for us to go. The Gauntlet. And like, they're just like, oh, the Gauntlet. What's
there's
that?
There's more to this? Jesus Christ.
You know what's the worst part? This movie's like 92 minutes long.
So is your review.
Yes. You wanted me to give you a play-by-play, so I'm giving it to you. Damn, man. Anyway, so they're like,
his name to X. He's going to give it to us.
So anyways, so they have to run through the Gauntlet, which is actually just like a fun run with zombies in it. And of course, we eventually get the overhead shot where, oh no, they're surrounded and the 3 survivors have to do like, you know, back to back, you know, shooting up like random zombies that, you know, and none of their shots make sense whatsoever. Oh yeah, speaking of things that don't make sense, it doesn't make sense at all how the Russian guy managed to get over to Home Depot without a truck, but somehow he ended up over there. I don't
Did he crowd surf on the zombies?
No, because there's not enough zombies in this movie to do that.
Oh.
Like, it's really like the same 30 volunteers over and over again. Yeah, who were all promised like a free like Wendy's lunch.
Give me a coupon book for Frosties.
That's only if we get some really good shots, so you better bleed real well. So
also,
anyway.
We can't afford fake blood, so you're going to have to use your own.
Pass the machete.
If you start feeling nauseous, Nurse Ethel over there has some Band-Aids. You could choose between Bumblebee and Barbie. Anyway, so, you know, the Gauntlet, which is really just a zombie fun run, you know, they eventually make it. And they're spotted by, a military convoy. When they're like, what are you doing here? Well, didn't the general send you? No, nobody sent us. We were actually the last recon, blah, 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 blah. You know, and you're lucky that we spotted you because you almost had an airstrike, blah, blah, blah. And it's just like, well, Dolph is just like, well, you know, you have to get her to safety because she's the last, she's our best hope of getting this thing cured. And the guy's like, shit, are you serious? He's like, yeah, totally serious. And the girl's just like, oh, Dolph Lundgren, you know, if there's anything I've learned through all this, it's that, you know, maybe what makes us humans as opposed to zombies is we care at the end of the day. That's what's really important. And I shit you not, Dolph Lundgren's final words in the movie are like, well, babe, there's not enough space in my tombstone to write that. And then he walks on back into the Gauntlet because he's going to die anyway because of the fucking LV-420 shit's run out. And that's the last that we see of them. And then, like, you know, they all get in the convoy and they pile away and, you know, like, you think, oh, good. All right, well, that's the end of the movie. I guess they're going to save it for a sequel. But we're not done.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Oh, my God. No,
because, by the way, all those teenagers that we saw in the beginning of the film, you know, like all like the CSU recruits or whatever, they all pull off their VR headsets and they're like, oh, good game, everybody. Oh, man, you should, why'd you have to leave me with, you know, patient zero? And, you know, it's just like, oh, okay, all right, so it's all just a game. And then we get this serious narration from main hero guys, like, and then 2 weeks later, the real outbreak began. And it turns out that the government had been trying to train all of us because they knew it was coming. And so when it did come, they handpicked us so that we blah, 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 blah. And I'm just like, and then it starts up with this, like, you know, like that kind of like Starship Troopers, like, I'm doing my part, you know, kind of like bullshit, yeah. Except they really suck at it because they're not Paul Verhoeven. and they just don't get it. And I'm just like, oh, okay, all right. So we're going to rip off Starship Troopers again. And then all of a sudden it goes back to evil corporation people. And it's just like, it's the evil corporation lady. And she's just like smiling at her laptop and she closes it. And that's the end of the movie. And I'm just like, oh, okay. So we're also going to rip off Resident Evil with this shit too. But then it was just like, why did they show her looking at the film? So how did they come up with this? What is the actual film? I don't know.
It's like Inception.
It's too dumb to try to be like Inception. Like, no. Like, oh God, you know what? It's like high schoolers tried to make an Inception ending. Yeah.
Which is what they did.
Yeah. And so it is literally the worst video game movie I've ever seen. Like, Uwe Boll's shit deserves Academy Awards compared to this. Because not only is it just bad, it suffers the worst cinematic crime of all. And that is to be boring as absolute fuck.
Man. So, for $4.99, what is your verdict?
No! 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 Oh, my God. For four...
You said you bought it on sale.
I did. Oh, God. Yeah, normally this thing, I think it retails for, like,
$7.99. Jeez. It's a budget movie.
Yeah. Oh, it's super budget movie.
They don't even charge $15 for it. $15 or $20. No, $7.99.
I was going to say, Universal charges like $10 for their Doom movie, which I'm still trying to get my hands on. Yeah. No. Just don't watch this. Don't.
Nice. Cole, are you happy you joined for this?
I am so many emotions right now. This is one of the rare times where I wish I had a camera in my face, because I'm just sitting here with like my jaw dropped and I'm so confused.
I'm glad
I'm just, I like could... this was a thing that happened in my life now, and I don't know how to handle this.
Well, obviously you need to go rent Dead Trigger so you can go see it and, you know, participate in the awfulness.
I don't know that I want to. You made fun of my entertainment choices and my feels are hurt.
Oh, come on, Cole.
Oh, my God. Well, that is it for this episode. Thanks to everyone for coming on and doing their thing. I have no clue who's on the episode because it's fucking Friday when we're recording this.
Yeah, because I was just like, Joe, I just got done watching the worst fucking movie. He was like, you want to record this now? And I'm like, yeah, well, it's still fresh in my fucking head. Oh, God.
While the nightmares are still fresh.
I'm actually thinking about making this like a double feature tonight, too.
Oh, my Lord. Well, this review is not going to be a double feature because the episode is over.
Yeah, of course. I know that. But I meant like I was going to watch another video game movie along with this, too.
I know what you meant. I'm just saying that we're not going to have the review on here.
Yes. Oh, my God. We covered that.
This is the worst 35 minutes in the history of SML.
I'd like to think almost every minute of SML history counts towards the worst of SML history, though.
No, this is special. This is a special kind of bad.
Nice.
Oh my god, I hope you tag the makers on Twitter, and I hope they retweet it and read it and listen to all fucking, I don't know how long it's going to be after Truncate Sun, 30 some minutes, 35, 36, I don't know. Just however long you listen to this is too long.
I apologize. I'd say we're sorry, but
we're not sorry.
Well, no, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry I fucking watched the movie. I'm sorry for Matt. You know who I'm actually sorry for? I'm sorry for Mad Finger Games. That their name had to be sullied with this movie.
I feel bad for myself.
Well, yeah, but that's because you know me.
Yeah. Oh, man. Jacob, any final words to end the show?
Well, I don't know. It's going to be a hard choice. Do I go with It Came from the Desert based on a game from like 1990 that nobody remembers that like, and for a movie that came out last year? Or do I go with the video game documentary? Ooh, find out next time, listeners.
Or don't.